Our scripture reading this morning comes from Paul's letter to the Ephesians, chapter 5, verse 8. If you're following along, it's on page 194 in the little Bibles that are in front of you. "For once, you were darkness, but now in the Lord, you are light. Live as children of light." That's it. Hear what the Spirit is saying. Hear God.
There's an old saying in the theater, if you can't be good, be fast, right? People who know me well will tell you that I can be thrifty. I'm willing to spend money on some things, but I'm tight on others. I don't like to spend a lot of money on motels. Thus, I've stayed at a lot of Motel 6s. Motel 6 is a discount chain. They don't leave a mint on the pillow at Motel 6. They give you a soap bar that's about the size of a mint, and you work up a sweat in the shower trying to get lather out of it. Then you get to dry off with one of Motel 6's famous see-through towels. I've had some perfectly fine experiences at Motel 6. Other times it hasn't been as good, more like Motel 5 or Motel 4. And one night in California, my wife Kit and I stayed at a Motel 6 that should have been called Motel 0. That was years ago, and I can still smell that motel room. Although my experiences at Motel 6 have varied, I've always loved the Motel 6 radio advertising slogan, "We'll leave the light on for you." Grace United Methodist Church already has a wonderful slogan, "Out of the many, we are one." But if we had to have a backup, I'd vote for "We'll leave the light on for you." Churches should be about casting light, light for Christian discipleship, for what it means to follow Jesus in our time and place. Churches should eliminate opportunities for service and social justice. Churches should provide light so Christian community can happen. So many of us are online nearly all our waking hours, emailing, texting, checking, Facebook, Skyping. But real community is in short supply these days. Church, at its best, offers an especially deep and meaningful form of community. I like this definition from the late Reverend William Sloan Coffin, Jr. He said, "A church is a place where we try to think, speak, and act in God's way, not in the way of a fear-filled world. A church is a home for love, a home for brothers and sisters to dwell in unity, to rest and be healed, to let go their defenses and be free, free from worries, free from tensions, free to laugh, free to cry." Coffin got it right, I think. This church, Grace, has been leaving its light on for a long time. No Methodist church in Dallas has met continuously in one building as long as Grace. We've been meeting here every Sunday since 1903. That's a pretty good slogan, too, every Sunday since 1903. This is a church with longevity, with legs, and we should be proud of that. But we should also acknowledge, especially during Black History Month, that this church was born in a period of strict racial segregation. After the Civil War, African Americans could vote and hold office. But when Reconstruction ended, the Jim Crow period set in, and African Americans lost the right to vote. Segregation was instituted in all phases of life. One small example, the Dallas Public Library was founded in 1901. It would be 1930 before there was a branch African Americans could use, the Paul Dunbar branch. It would be in the 1950s before they had free reign of the library system. Grace didn't create segregation, but it was part of it. I've been doing a good bit of research on Grace's history, and I'd like to be able to report to you that it was a center of opposition to segregation, a little underground railroad. I found no evidence of that. But I do believe the stirrings of racial reconciliation were present here. There's a beautiful theological concept called prevenient grace. It means God is working in people before they even realize it, before they've been converted. I want to argue that there was a kind of prevenient grace working here at Grace Church in the area of racial reconciliation. I say that in part because of Mrs. L.H. Potts. We have a stained glass window that bears her name. It's over on this side underneath the big glass of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. The people sitting down front can see it. You sinners in the back will have to wait until communion. The glass shows a beautiful young woman in a robe. Under her is the name Mrs. L.H. Potts. Now, based on my research, I don't think that is Mrs. L.H. Potts. I think Mrs. L.H. Potts either donated that glass or it was donated in her honor. I hope it was the latter, because she was most deserving. Mrs. L.H. Potts was a charter member of Grace and led the fundraising drive that bought the property where we are today. More important, she led the Women's Missionary Society, not just for Grace, but for the entire North Texas Conference of the Methodist Church. Mrs. L.H. Potts was the driving force behind the creation of a Methodist settlement house in Dallas, the Wesley House. The settlement house movement began in England and spread to the United States. The most famous settlement house was Hull House, led by Jane Addams in Chicago. Settlement houses provided food, clothing, health care, and education for people on the margins. Mrs. L.H. Potts started the one in Dallas, and evidence suggests that it worked to some degree across racial lines. Something was stirring at this church through Mrs. L.H. Potts. Prevenient grace was happening at Grace. The 1920s were a particularly tough time for race relations. The Ku Klux Klan grew very strong across the country. The Klan was big in Dallas, drawing 160,000 people to Klan Day at Fair Park. But there was a strong anti-Klan movement in Dallas as well, led by the Dallas Morning News. And that group had its own big rally. And one of the speakers was O.B. Colquitt, the former governor of Texas. O.B. Colquitt was a member of this church. Something was stirring here. Prevenient grace was happening at Grace. In 1935, a woman named Hattie Rankin responded to the desperate poverty that she saw in West Dallas by moving there and making her home a place for Bible study, but also for social work. Hattie Rankin might well be considered the mother of social work in West Dallas. The chapel she started would, over time, merge with Wesley House and become the Wesley Rankin Center that we know today. It's still Methodist-supported, still meeting the needs of those on the margins. Hattie Rankin was an early staff member at Grace Church. Something was stirring here. Prevenient grace was present at Grace. St. Paul United Methodist Church is the oldest Black Methodist church in Dallas, older than Grace. And its choir accepted an invitation to sing a program of Negro spirituals at Grace one Sunday evening in 1942. A couple of years later, the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church brought its choir here for Grace's Race Relations Week. Modest steps, but something was stirring that Grace felt a need for Race Relations Week and a relationship with these churches. In the 1950s and 60s, Grace became the home to a Mexican-American church that needed a place to meet. Fast forward to the early 1980s, and under the Reverend Bill Bryan, Grace threw its doors wide open, welcoming all, including Asian immigrants settling in East Dallas. Diversity became a cherished value for Grace under Bill, and that has continued under pastors Chuck Cox, Diana Holbert, and Judith Reedy. Back in its earliest days, Grace hosted a tent revival by Bob Jones, a famous fundamentalist preacher. There's a very conservative college in South Carolina that bears his name. In 1984, Grace was visited by none other than the Dalai Lama. He'd heard about Grace's outreach to Cambodians and other immigrants and wanted to visit this church. From Bob Jones to the Dalai Lama. That's quite a trajectory. As Grace has become more diverse, it's also become a more missional church. Grace's affiliates include the Agape Clinic, the Open Door Preschool, the North Texas, the East Texas, East Dallas Legal Clinic, Alley's House, Bonhoeffer House, Project Transformation. I think of the work Nicole Melke of Grace has done in establishing Ubuntu Kids, the wonderful violin program at Zaragoza Elementary. More than 30 low-income Hispanic and African-American kids now have music in their lives, and they're doing better in school, too. Surely Mrs. L.H. Potts and Hattie Rankin are smiling down on Nicole's work. Grace has certainly left its light on for me. I wandered into this church about 11 years ago. It's given me sustaining friendships, a chance to serve with others, a chance to discuss and sometimes act on social justice issues. It's given me a wonderful community to be part of. You know that term, collateral damage? It's where something bad happens to somebody else and you get messed up too, almost inadvertently. I think there should be a corresponding term, collateral blessing. That's what I've experienced at Grace. For example, I'm not much of a Bible student, but I found that by singing in the choir, I've learned a good bit of the Bible. The anthems Michael has us sing are grounded in specific Bible texts. Sometimes Judith or Adam will be preaching on a passage and I'll think, I know that, I've sung that. Collateral blessings, I've had them here. How can Grace be a better church, a better Christian community? I think we can learn from jazz. Jazz is improvisational, like life. Jazz musicians have to be present in the moment. They have to listen and respond. They have to take risks and be vulnerable. Churches can learn from jazz, from psychotherapists too. I read once that psychotherapists divide their patients into two groups, those that need to tighten up and those that need to loosen up. Surely a church like Grace that was once all white and still is mostly white can stand a little more loosening up. But we're getting there. And for evidence, I point to the fact that we're once again having Jazz Sunday. I'm a writer, and as I looked into Grace's history, I was delighted to learn that one of its charter members was a poet, William C. Lamar. The Dallas Public Library has a book of his poems published in 1942. I turned the pages of that book recently, hoping against hope to find he'd written a poem about this church. And there it was, on page 27, Spirit of Grace. Short, I'll read it for you now. Speak to our souls, O Spirit of Grace, no longer fettered and bound. Speak from the years of a glorious past that shines like a halo around. Speak from the heart of your ministry, from altar, from organ and choir. Call us to living, unselfish and high, in our hearts enkindle a fire. Speak from the lights that softly glow in your beautiful windows three. Tell of the one who knelt all alone in the shades of Gethsemane. Tell of the women who sought in the tomb the Christ who arose from his sleep. Tell of the tender shepherd's care, how he knew the names of his sheep. Speak through the names on panel and pane, some having passed on to their rest. Tell of sacrifice, devotion, and love, and the joy of giving one's best. Speak of the truth, the life, and the way, the one who life's pathway has trod, whose rod and staff are comfort and stay. Tell of the grace of God. The words of William C. Lamar, written a long time ago about this church. I'm going to close with an altar call. It's not the real altar call. Judith will give that at the end. This is the prevenient altar call. But if you're a visitor here this morning, consider becoming a part of this church. If you're a part of this church, but on the periphery, consider moving to the center. If you're one of the core members of this church, keep the faith. Together we can make sure that the light left on by Grace burns brighter than ever. Thank you.